Hello, and welcome to Fire Engineering Hump Day Hangout and our show, Issues and Challenges in Today's Fire Service. My name is Scott Thompson. Thanks for joining us. We have a little different group today. Rick and John are out teaching in Kansas, and Chief McGrath is out of state. So you're going to have us, members from the colony, but we're glad to have you on. I think we got a great topic today. We're going to be talking about formal mentoring in the fire service, and it's something that we're all pretty passionate about. I've kind of had a saying where I believe that mentoring is the future of fire service learning and leadership. So I'm excited to have our guest on today to talk about that. Just as a reminder, if you have any questions, zip over to Twitter and send them out our way. Please make sure to add hashtag FE Talk for your questions. So like I mentioned, today is our topic is formal mentoring in the fire service. And with us, we have Battalion Chief Garrett Rice from the Colony Fire Department, Captains Jesse Grail and Westbrook Tier from the Colony. And then while he's not new to the fire service, but new to us, we have Bryce Campbell, who we're really glad to have on board. He's got 10 years with another fire department, more than that, 12 years. And so we're glad to have him on. Gentlemen, thank you for coming on. I'm excited to have you on. So talk about mentoring. Just a little background. I really started thinking about formal mentoring back in 2002 when I went to work for Rick. When I joined the Louisville Fire Department, they had started a mentoring book program that was a couple months into it. So when I came in as the training chief, one of the first things that Rick wanted me to do was to see that project through. And I guess it was that point in time that I really started to see the value of formal mentoring. I call it formal mentoring. The traditional mentoring works great. Probably the type of mentoring that most of us are familiar with, where either we seek out someone, a senior member, or a senior member seeks us out, invests in us. The reason why I believe in formal mentoring, and we're going to talk about that, is not everybody gets to benefit from a mentoring relationship in a traditional mentoring format. So the goal with formal mentoring is to create a process where every member of the organization can benefit from that valuable relationship. So moving forward a little bit from my time in Louisville, we had great success with mentoring. And when I got to the colony, it was something I felt strongly about. So we really introduced the second generation of formal mentoring, not only for new hires, but for those who wanted to promote the newly promoted. And since that time, we have added to it, modified it, and really tried to fine tune it to meet our organizational need. And so we want to talk about that. And before I say anything else, if you go to fireserviceleadership.com, you can download the formal mentoring process for free. It's my website. All you have to do is put in a little bit of information and feel free to download that. Use it however you like. I always say you don't have to give me any credit. I just ask that you don't change it up and go out there and start selling it, because it's something I would like the entire fire service to have access to. There's the boss, Bobby. How are you? Welcome. He's getting set up there and probably.
Yeah, I'm visiting our offices in New Jersey, so I apologize. I'm all over the place here.
Well, we're glad to have you. Have you recovered from FDIC?
No. I usually recover from FDIC around May of the following year, just in time to get slammed.
Well, if you would, Bobby, start us off and maybe give us the highlights. Tell us a little bit about the incredible success that FDIC 2022 was.
Oh, it was great. We had 31,000 people, you know, about 2,000 shy of our all-time high, but 2,500 maybe. But remember, we did summer school. So, you know, we had 28,000 people there. So it's pretty amazing when you think we had over 50,000 unique people within 6 months coming to Indianapolis to train. And classes were great. I just got off the phone with the Illinois Fire Services Institute. We're talking about a couple of new programs for them. We've got Todd Taylor and his guys. We're going to have some industrial fire classes. We're going to have some, we may have two hands-on collapse classes, one in Indy and one at IFSI. So a lot of interesting things came out of it. So we're going to really expand the hands-on, which is interesting. And it's just mind-boggling. But that's where we're headed.
Making something great even better.
Yeah, and the call for presentations is open, you know, so that, you know, I'll expect all of you characters to submit something. You can't honestly be on a call about mentoring and not put in to teach. That'd be kind of like the height of hypocrisy right there. I'm just saying.
Okay, everybody heard that, right? The boss right there.
Yeah, director. No, I'm not. And you know, all joking aside, I mean, I think one of the biggest parts of mentoring really in the fire service is being willing to go out there and teach and share your materials and do train the trainer type work, right? Like, you know, the proprietary programs and all that kind of stuff are fine. And I get it, you know, lots of folks have them, but the programs that really have value are the guys and gals that go out and say, look, this is train the trainer, man. I'm not, you know, because when you think of it, you show me the fire program that somebody actually invented. Yeah. I'll give you a half hour to draw a crowd and then I'll kiss your butt on Main Street because it doesn't exist. You know, everybody taught us what we know. You know what I mean? And maybe it was four or five guys or four or five gals or, you know, who knows, right? But, you know, it's a profession, it's a trade, and certain aspects of the trade, you know, evolve and people put their twist on it, and that's great. But their twist comes from somebody else's twist. There's a great book that I obviously, it's always a great book, but there's a great book called The Innovation of Everything by a guy named Matt Ridley. And it's a fascinating story. So he goes through all the innovations through time. He also wrote The Rational Optimist, and he's got a new one out. I have not gotten that one yet, but Matt Ridley is a great writer, but The Innovation of Everything. And so he talks about all the different things, like the light bulb. And if we all credit Edison, right? But if you go to England has a guy that they credit. If you go to Eastern Europe, they have a guy that they credit, because all of the elements for the light bulb were converging at the same time, right? Electricity, vacuum tubes, all of the elements were there. It was just who came up with the most robust filament. And they all kind of hit on the same kind of thing at the same time, right? And we forget that, you know, there was Edison and Westinghouse were having the great currency battles. There was DC power and AC power. And so there was all kinds of stuff going on, but it's because of electricity was being mainstreamed, if you will. And it's the same thing in the fire service. You know, thermal imagers came into play and there was this adaptation of it and that adaptation of it. And I don't think that innovation follows technology or technology follows innovation. It's a chicken and the egg kind of construct, right? But so it just gets you thinking. It's a wonderful book if you're a firefighter, because it really helps you understand how we've evolved, right? The motorized apparatus and the different tools that we have. And so I think and I love to read, and he's a great writer. And The Rational Optimist is an amazing book also. So I really, the kind of books that you get mad at me when I recommend them, because you'll all send me notes saying, you suck. I was up till 3 o'clock in the morning. I couldn't put that damn thing down. I hate you. You know what I mean? And I'm like, okay.
There you go. And for sure, experience that is not shared is experience wasted. So we all do have that obligation to share what's been shared with us. Outstanding. So I thought we'd start off and go to Chief Rice. Battalion Chief Garrett Rice is with us in the Colony Fire Department. And Garrett, I wanted to ask you just a little bit about your efforts as our training coordinator to kind of really introduce our last generation of mentoring into the organization and kind of the interaction you had with all our members as we really tried to move our mentoring efforts to the next level.
Thanks, Chief. My time with the Colony obviously has been a little short, but when I came in, the monthly mentoring program, at least the forms and all of that were already established and, you know, kind of expected that was being done. I think it was, a year or two ago when your mentoring packet finally kind of hit and was published. And I know you struggled over, you know, whether or not that was going to be utilized in our organization or not, because obviously you're using that outside the department. But to me, the information was just too valuable. So It is a big packet, 60 something pages. So we broke it down into, you know, smaller chunks, an issue that is training from the captains to their crews. And I think it gave everybody kind of the backstory on already what they were doing. You know, I think so much of what we do and the successes that we have is because we don't really have a formal mentoring program. I mean, it's there, but I think it's more the organic, and it has become ingrained in what everything we do. So I think from that standpoint, there was a lot of success in getting some of the science behind it and the why, and really working through that. And then what we did is attached questions that they would use to spark conversations about mentoring and just get inside people's brains. And that really kind of took off. And then at least from that standpoint, we got opportunities to share that in Oklahoma City with Chief Mike Walker, who was trying to put up a similar program. And just recently we had a chance to share that in Dublin, Ireland, Dublin Fire Brigade with Andrew Young and his group out there. And the cool thing is, and Bobby alluded to it a little bit, is, you know, you get to give this stuff away. And so for me, it's a little tougher to mentor, you know, I've got two of my captains on here. It's a little tougher to mentor them because I'm not housed with them. So you're trying to catch an hour here, an hour there, you know, you try to maybe read some similar books, you try to have some conversations, but it's difficult. But at least one of my strategies as a BC is to take them along for the ride. And so they accompanied me to Oklahoma City. They were on there with Dublin Fire Brigade. And it's been neat to see them develop, you know, and hopefully I'm bridging the gap, some of those things, and help support them in their careers. But that's kind of at least what we've been, you know, doing right now in the colony.
Captain Tier and Captain Grail, I'll go to you next, but Captain Tier, you're a captain on truck 14. Yeah, you have a fairly good size house. You have the rescue there. You have the medic crew there with you. Would you tell us a little bit about kind of your approach to managing the mentoring program at the station level? And then Captain Grail, I'll go to you and kind of ask the same question, but how you kind of maintain the quality of it, how you choose your mentors, and just some of the things that you see as the result of our efforts, if you would, please.
Yes, sir. Thank you for having me on. I've kind of been blessed as I came up through the colony because I was green as could be when I first started there. And I've had some amazing leaders that I've been able to learn from along the way that did some of the mentoring in their own fashion and was able to take little pieces from it. And then when you put out the more formal model, kind of bring it all together. One of the easiest ways for me to explain how we do it at the truck house is, first off, I've just got great people. We've got some amazing go-getters that want to train, want to learn, and want to teach. Bryce just came on board about a month ago. In fact, he's due for his first little mentoring evaluation using the formal stuff. It was last week, but I was at MSOC, so we get to catch up on that when I get back next tour. But we have guys that, you know, even though Bryce is coming on with a lot of experience from another department, still want to listen to his stories and what he knows, and then add on kind of what Chief Rice talked about how we do it with the colony way. And man, those guys are, you can kind of delegate some of that out, and some of it you don't even have to, cause they're just so into it. They want to rip the whole truck apart. And every night, you know, we've got everything dumped out of the truck compartment by compartment. So if we catch something, we can throw it back on, but they'll just spend hours out there going over that kind of stuff. Guys like Hamlin and Sandoval, they're go-getters, and they want to teach, they want to learn. And then one of the things in the mentoring packet that I think gets missed on a lot is the part about the reverse mentoring. You've mentioned how we're bringing these guys on and they've got years of service from somewhere else. Man, some of them have come from halfway across the state, or, you know, in Bryce's case, like Brian, they have completely different methods. It's like if you go to West Coast or East Coast, there's different stuff to learn from. And so we're learning from him just like he's learning from us. The delegating part, it comes down to, you know, I just done doing my rotation over there for the battalion step up stuff. And I mentioned to Chief Rice, one of the hardest things for me to wrap my head around was going from managing a crew of 10 people to managing 30 people on the battalion level. And he said, you don't have to manage 30 people. you've got to manage those other four officers or the four people that are riding OIC that day. And it kind of twisted my outlook on our mentoring too. There's a lot of stuff that I lean on my AOs. I've got two AOs, one on the rescue and one on the truck. And then I've got my senior men that are there. So a lot of that comes down to them and us going through them and the checkoff process and making sure they got the proficiencies. And then I just kind of put it all together and sit down and go over those expectations.
And you do great stuff down there. There's no question about it. Just my definition, just for those listening, I kind of view coaching as dealing with the here and now, typically performance related stuff, where somebody with some more experiences watch somebody with a little less experience perform something, and then they provide feedback, which is extremely valuable, and then they do it again till we get it right. Kind of purposeful practice. Mentoring is where a one-on-one relationship is formed and kind of positioning the learner for long-term success. And so that's kind of how I view it, just to kind of define mentoring and coaching. Captain Grail, you're over at Squad 18. You also have a medic in your house, but can you kind of talk about the same things that Captain Tier talked about and kind of your perspective in your firehouse?
Sure. I obviously echo a lot of the same things that Captain Tier said, but to kind of build on it, I feel like mentoring is, especially within a company, very much kind of a team effort. Where, you know, a new person that comes into the house may have, you know, an official or an assigned mentor, but every single member on the company obviously has their own strengths and weaknesses. And that's definitely a conversation, you know, that I have with the, you know, set official mentor of somebody that if you're going to be in that role, you have to know the things that you're also weak at. And you have to seek out other members within your company that are better at things that you're not. So, you know, maybe all the information flows to one person, but you have to be in a position where you're seeking out help from other team members in areas that they're good at, so that we're all putting an effort towards bringing people up and mentoring people. And the thing I really like about our mentoring program is everything that we have set out, you know, Bryce, I'm sure will speak about it, but there's a set thing where you're meeting with the officer on a set schedule. So it's the entire mentoring process is a lot more systemic rather than, you know, just kind of a roll of the dice of, you know, what other organizations may experience. To kind of build on what Chief Rice said, you know, he said it was kind of difficult for captains and battalion chiefs to mentor. The thing that I enjoy about the mentoring process between captains and battalion chief is it almost kind of flips to where it's on tap, to where even though he doesn't get to spend a whole lot of time, if I'm in the same position with my people as he has been, then I can make a quick phone call like, hey, this is what I got. It just takes a lot less of the fluff away from it, but we're both have been in the same spot. But it's just a quick resource that you can call and reach out.
Outstanding. So, Bryce, if you would, give us a little bit of your background, because you do have some experiences, and then maybe a little bit about why you chose to make the move. And I say that because one of the things, and I think everybody on the panel has one time or another sat on our interview boards, and one of the things we hear all the time when people come into the organization is they're coming for the quality daily training, and we kind of call it that. And then mentoring is also very important. So, Bryce, welcome on. And if you would kind of tell us a little bit about your background and then your views on the mentoring process, which you are currently involved in at the candidate level.
Yeah, thanks, Chief. So a little bit of my background, I'm going on 12 years in the fire service. I did the first 11 with Bryan Fire Department, about an hour north of Houston, and kind of had some things going on there. We had a double line of duty death, and it kind of was a catalyst for me. I got into a bunch of stuff in the department, got on like every team you could get on. I was a lead instructor in our recruit academy.
And you were an apparatus operator, right? A driver.
I was an apparatus operator on the ladder truck. I had actually just got made as lieutenant, actually left the department right before promoting. So like a week before promoting. And so it was a hard move for me, but one of the reasons I did move is, you know, I'm a big fire service nerd, I guess I can call it. And I go to conferences, I read lots of books, and I stumbled upon your book, the functional fire company, and it kind of spurred my interest. I'd seen you speak, and then I knew some guys at the Colony just from seeing them at conferences, and everything I kept hearing is you had experienced guys going there. There's formal mentoring. There was something there that, being a student of the fire service and a student of leadership, I wanted to dive deeper into, because the department I came from wasn't a bad department. They had a lot going for them, but I felt like I wanted another challenge, wanted to get us into the next level, if you will. And so I made that decision to come and kind of actually dive into the culture, dive into the mentoring program, the training culture. And so right from the start, I read your mentoring packet and everything like that. Right from the start, I actually am lucky enough to work under Captain Tier. Captain Grail was my in-doc instructor, and Chief Rice is my chief. So I'm lucky that I've gotten to work with all these guys. And from day one, there's an expectation, like, here's where you are. And it wasn't, shut your mouth, stay quiet your first year. You're a rookie, you're a cadet, whatever you want to call it. It was, we want to show you the Colony way, but we also want to learn from you. My very first tour, I sat down with Captain Tier. He laid out his expectations and wanted to learn about me more than just the regular, who are you, where'd you come from? So someone mentioned earlier that relationship, I was diving more into that. And then I was assigned my mentor, Hamlin, he's been brought up. And from the very beginning, I guess the best way to describe it is it's almost like a big brother. He's going to let you go through some stuff and find your way through things. But he's also there to make sure you don't fail. Essentially, you're set up for success from the beginning. And Captain Tier talked about diving into everything. I shot a text to everyone I got hired with, and I'm not even kidding, the first day's truck check took till 3 p.m. And so guys are very interested in getting you caught up to speed with the Colony way. There's benchmarks set. He constantly, they want to set you up for success. So instead of starting with a mop and a broom and here's how you clean the station, which I know happens in a lot of places in the fire service, they started with, let us see your mask up times. Let us see your bunk out times. Can you run the saws, throw some ladders. So from the very beginning, the priorities were set by everyone on the crew, from in-doc to getting on shift work. The battalion chiefs come down, they check on you also. So I think the big thing is it may be getting done informally at a lot of places, but it's a very, I want to say formal, Chief Rice mentioned that it's already ingrained in the culture, but you can see when there's an actual effort and a conscious effort made to set those standards, set those expectations from the beginning, and everybody's on that page. It's very easy. Me coming in with 12 years teaching a full-length fire academy, TCFP Fire Academy, even with all that coming in, I've been able to learn a ton. And I'm thankful that I got put with a very motivated crew and a good mentor.
So Captain Tier, we talked about the process, and you're Bryce's captain. Talk a little bit about, you're getting a new guy. Captain Grail did a great job. He ran our in-doc, and he provides a lot of information on the men and women coming into the organization for captains to kind of work with prior to them coming to your firehouse. But tell us a little bit about how you chose Zach to be Bryce's mentor, and kind of your expectations of getting this going, and then how you kind of supervise it to make sure we maintain the quality and the integrity of the program and the relationships.
Yes, sir. So that's one thing that makes the mentoring process that much easier, is we have that 2-week in-doc process. As an officer, once I find out what firefighter I'm getting, I reach out to Captain Grail and I reach out to the people that taught each different discipline at in-doc, find out what the strong points were, what the weak points were, what does this person need more coached up on? We're bringing in experienced guys, so I just need to know what their biggest thing is. So when Bryce came on, I find out they didn't do a lot of vertical vent. So that lets me know when we start doing our hands-on approach day one, as soon as he's done with his ghosting shifts and he's riding backwards, he could be the guy up there running that saw. So that's one of the areas we start focusing on right off the bat. He already mentioned that the mask up times and all that kind of stuff. So we make sure we're squared away on the basics, but then we start getting to the more specific task-oriented stuff. As far as choosing Hamlin, like I said, I've got a super strong crew. I think I could have chosen just about any guy I've got over there. I chose Hamlin mainly because Sandoval's going through looking at possibly testing for apparatus operator. He's good at he's been doing a lot of swinging as far as doing some driving stuff, some step up driving stuff. And Hamlin's just one of those guys that he's salt of the earth. And, you know, like Bryce said, he is the detail guy. I mean, he's taught me stuff about chainsaws that I had no clue about. He'll take stuff apart down to the smaller than your pinky nail out of the motor of it and show you how it works and put it back all together. And it's kind of like Forrest Gump putting the gun together in the middle of it. I mean, it's amazing. He's that guy that he is your epitome of like a solid back step that knows everything there is about the fire side of it, the firefight part of it. And so there's not a better guy to put in the mentor role for somebody that's coming on board. That's kind of how I chose that spot, and how we kind of tag team off from the NDOC into the mentoring for the new candidate.
You know, I think one of the things a lot of fire departments struggle with when you have probationary periods is, number one, maintaining an adequate flow of feedback so that the new member understands where they are. Hopefully it's daily, but at least monthly through that period. And I believe, you know, just kind of my informal opinion is we probably let go of above average number of people during the probationary period. If they're not cutting it by month number 10, then we have to make a decision. And one of the things that I really like about the formal mentoring process is when we have to make that decision and let somebody go, they know exactly where they stand. Nobody's surprised by it. And I can tell you, everyone that I can remember has stood up and I said, have you been given every opportunity to be successful? And they'll say, yes, sir. Shake my hand. And they walk out the door knowing that both sides tried. So that's really a great thing to have where you're evaluating those people. And, you know, if you bring somebody in, if they're not hitting in a probationary period, they're probably not going to be rock stars after that. That's not always the case. Captain Grail, tell us just a little bit about the NDOC and then transitioning from NDOCs. Kind of tell us the other side of what Captain Tier told us, transitioning those members from NDOC into the mentoring, formal mentoring process, if you would.
Okay, so this was my first time to do NDOC was Bryce's class. And kind of the point of our NDOC is not necessarily to get every single skill to a proficiency level. It's mostly just to introduce, get kind of some quick visuals on where their skill is at. Definitely being able to talk to them. I was with them the entire week that we had. We did a 6-day NDOC program, so I was kind of with them in the entire week. Even though our instructors changed, I still kind of built some sort of relationship with them and kind of figured out the ins and outs of where they come from, what they're comfortable with, what they're not comfortable with. And then just with, you know, my knowledge of the department and the people that I've worked with, you kind of start filling people in of just their personality type and who I think they would fit best with, or, you know, what companies kind of fit their style or that may be able to offer them something where they can grow, you know, in the areas of their weakness. But also that kind of, like we said before, that kind of goes both ways. A little bit of, you know, where one company may have a hole, you're offering them a guy that maybe is going to up their game a little bit. So it's definitely a two-way street. And so then after everyone gets their assignments, I think for the other officers that, of course, Captain Tier is on our battalion, so I spoke with him face-to-face. Just kind of gave him a short synopsis of, you know, where they were at skill-wise, whether they're going to an engine or a truck. You know, we have their competencies, so we can kind of say, hey, they're probably going to need more work when you get to the engine days, or specifically if it's a 2.5-inch deployment. So there was kind of a synopsis on each candidate as they went to the company they were, so that they can kind of pick up from where we left off at NDOC, and then as they get deeper into their competencies.
And then part of the process is especially the formal process is each month you sit down one-on-one with your your candidate and your mentors. And it's part of a goal setting. You go over strengths and weaknesses and set goals for the next work period, along with a checklist of things and so forth. Chief Rice, maybe talk up. We talked a lot about our new hires and specifically a little bit about Bryce's experience. Share a little bit about the shadowing and some of the things that you're doing with your officers as mentoring when you're preparing them to step up on a temporary basis as a battalion chief.
Yes, sir. So I've kind of been blessed, and you know, it's funny. I guess you could probably argue it either which way about when we promote somebody, whether or not they leave your shift and get a whole new thing. And I'm sure all of you could weigh in on that, but I've lucked out. You know, Captain Grail was a fireman underneath me. Captain Tier, I believe, might've come over as a fireman. I think as a driver is what I got you. So I've had these relationships with these guys. And so Captain Tier just finished, his 2 years earlier this year. And that kind of signaled his time to start the car and move over to that. But the cool thing is it's been an ongoing, you know, process. It's not like I just got them a year ago and I'm having to quickly learn them. It's been continual conversations and development. So it made the time on the car, a little bit easier. But we did three tours, which for us, that's three 48-hour periods. We've done it a couple of different ways. I'll be honest. I mean, Captain Tier is a smart guy. The little stuff that we're doing, scheduling or staffing or time off or any of those things, those are functional things that it's not too big a thing for him to learn. What I had to do, and we tried it, it was kind of the first time we did it. I gave him the keys day one. There was no, hey, watch me do this or whatever. I said, hey, I'm going to be over here in the passenger seat and you have to run everything from day one. But I'm here for these three tours and let's have the conversations and let's ask the questions. And, we went and we burned down buildings all over the city, running command scenarios, and then just spent time, time that I don't normally get to spend with him. I'll tell you, it was from, 7 a.m. until close to 10 p.m. every single night. So we got some good opportunities. We had a couple of structure fire calls where I could watch him perform and then afterwards come back and go, hey man, great stuff on this. Let's clean some of these other things up. Consider this, and it just became a really cool dialogue. And while Captain Grail doesn't probably want to come off his squad, I know he loves his company. He is well poised as well moving forward for this next process. So we're looking forward, to these guys. I think that's the other part is, as a mentor, I care about each one of those guys that, anything the fire service has that can offer that they can take advantage of it. And so sometimes I'm able to see them for what they could be or where they could be. Right. And I had to have that at an early age. I had an officer who's actually fixing to retire next week, who I was a back step with. And he said, man, you need to take this test. You're going to be great. And that little push, that little spark and encouragement was, it's just what I needed. I'll be honest with you. I don't know that everybody's that way, but that kicked my butt into gear and it's kind of been going ever since. And so I hope at least I'm not demotivating anybody. I want to be there to motivate our people and, let them know, hey, you would be a good BC. While none of them probably want to come off the rig, they're definitely our next round of leaders.
One of the things, and some will disagree with this, but as the chief, one of the things that I'm very serious about and the expectations I have for all three battalion chiefs is I want us to be more alike than different. And I know, there's a lot of departments out there. They have five stations, three shifts, there's 15 different ways of doing things. My philosophy is that we're a system. We're the Colony Fire Department, and I want some consistency and some predictability across all three shifts. And I believe and disagree with me if you guys see it differently, but I think the mentoring process is one of the ways we get there. We're sending a consistent message of our leadership philosophies and principles, our operational philosophies and principles. And I believe that that allows us to deliver a more uniform service. The other part of it is that if there's challenges, if we have issues, that relationship is already formed. So maybe where a firefighter who is not part of that mentoring relationship has a problem, I call them learners versus mentees. They can go to that mentor and say, hey, you know, we're kind of seeing this and maybe this is something that, that you need to mention. And because that bond is there, then that mentor can go right to the learner and address that and work with them and make sure that, that things get cleaned up. What's going on? You guys are smiling. What's up? Somebody want to say something?
I throw out a challenge to anybody on this call that works for you to tell you how they disagree with your program there.
What?
No, so the overall goal of your program with the mentoring program is to develop an understanding of the system and how the system can help you move your organization forward. And it would just be ludicrous for any one of these guys to say, oh, well, I kind of disagree with
not necessarily that.
I thought I'd dare to them. I said, I dare anybody to disagree with the boss on this one.
No,
welcome anybody to disagree with me.
One of my questions coming up is how can we improve it? How can we make it better?
That's an important point. I think it's a different way to say to phrase the question. I'm just teasing you about how you phrase the question. Because I think what you're really saying is, you know, we've got this methodology now, but I'm always open for people to say, hey, well, what if we introduced this element?
You know, absolutely. So let's talk about that. You know, you guys are very comfortable. Let's talk about what the next generation maybe looks like. And to those that are interested in maybe starting a formal mentoring process, maybe some suggestions and thoughts on, you know, we're giving them the packet that they can download, but maybe some things that they need to think about maybe doing differently or improving. Anybody want to chime in on that? Chief Rice?
Yeah, it's fun what Bobby was kind of ribbing at there with disagreeing with you. But it's funny, on my way out yesterday, I caught B-Shift, our engine over there, and I love those guys, and got a rap with them for a little bit. And we were talking about standards, and we were talking about some mentoring and some discussion on that. And I shared with them, you know, you and I have spoke, and I think it's one of our big concerns, and this is different than mentoring, but, you know, what does the colony look like in 5 years, you know, and I think some departments can be short-sighted and say, this was our goal and we hit it and we've arrived. Cool. We can put our feet up and we can sit back and the work is done. And I was sharing with them, there's a metaphor for it that Jordan Peterson has been talking about with the lobster, right? And the, you know, the shell and it growing and exceeding the size of the shell. And then it breaks that shell and it becomes a little vulnerable, right? And then hides under a rock for a minute and regrows a shell and goes on growing. But that's the, you know, if we're going to succeed and we're going to be, a department people still want to come to in 5 years, we've got to grow this. Really the people that are going to take that is the Bryce Campbell, you know, the guy that came in with 12 years and gave up a lot, but saw something in us and says, hey man. And I think the big thing you have to do is you got to give it to him. We have to give it away freely. You got to allow him to own it. And the next version will be defined by the people we just hired. Outside of the department, and, you know, I've taught ladders for a number of years, and I realized I don't want to take a ladder class from a battalion chief. You know, I just don't want to do that anymore. I don't want to be the guy teaching. And I had people teaching with me. And this last time that somebody asked, Travis Harden, who's one of our guys, took the class over. And went out and went to Garland and taught over 100 people over a couple of days. You know, the last time we taught that class, I think two departments ended up making saves. So you do have to pass on the knowledge, but it will be defined by those. So I think the big thing is you got to get these guys to understand it and then step away and allow the program to evolve. And they have to have ownership in it. And for the senior guys, myself and some of the others, you also have to stay up with those changes and not go, well, back my day and this and that, you know, we have to stay up. And I think my biggest fear, and I've told you before, is becoming irrelevant in the fire service. you know, losing touch of where we're going or what we're doing. And so in order to be an asset to a Captain Grail and a Captain Tier, or even a Bryce Campbell, you got to stay up on everything that's going on, you know.
Bryce, since you just went through it, what could maybe we do a little bit better since you're right in it? Maybe something you were expecting that you didn't get. And if you were to say, hey, we need to revise some of this, what would that look like?
Well, a couple things, like on what Chief Rice was just saying, how you progress the program in the future. So I kind of have a unique outlook, I think, coming in. I started as a lead instructor for Brian's Recruit Academy, and we also had a two-week academy. And it was just, you know, real quick, see, you know, get you up to the Brian way, I guess you could call it. And then we decided that wasn't enough. People weren't coming out where we wanted them. So I helped transition it to a four-week academy and then eventually to a full 15-week academy, getting a TCFP cert, an EMR cert, and then 3 weeks of what we called the Brian Academy, trying to get people on the front end. But things weren't adding up. We were putting more and more time in and people were coming out better and better. But to me personally, I felt like there was that gap. After you got out of your initial academy, there was nothing to pick you up from there. So I think where a lot of fire departments struggle is trying to get people on a certain level, which a lot of departments have certain academies, but then the continuation of training and of someone to go to look out for you, you know, like I called it earlier, maybe that big brother mentality, kind of watching you and helping you grow as a firefighter in that department, I think is huge. So that mentoring kind of fills the gap after the academy from what I've seen. And as far as for me, what I have seen that maybe could be different is I'm always starving for more knowledge, more information. And as far as NDOT goes, the skills were, you know, we had a lot of work on skills. For me, I already talked to Chief Rice and Captain Grail about it, but adding stuff on the back end. So like the fire operations guidelines, stuff like that, that we can study on our own time. And just get us caught up. Not that it set me back at all, because getting on shift, my mentors made sure that I'm where I need to be. But pairing the skills with the book side of it, the knowledge side of it. And then as far as the mentoring process, I mean, I'm enjoying every aspect of it. Like Hamlin has come to me a few times, and Captain Tier, and both of them have been like, hey, how you doing? Or they'll see something that I'm doing that I can improve, and just little things department-wide are different from where you come from to how we do in the colony. And so you're not only catching up with the traditions of your new department, but you have someone to help you through that process instead of, you know, making your mistakes as a rookie and getting beat up for it. You have someone setting you ahead of the ball already. So I feel like starting with the colony, it's been easy. I've only been with the colony for a month and a half. It's been easy to transition into the crew and be an asset on the fire ground, as opposed to taking a year or two to finally become an asset.
You bring up a lot of great points. We have a question, a good question that I want to talk about. You know, I'm a big culture guy. And so we have a question asking about the pre-existing culture and mentoring, what needs to exist to have a formal mentoring program. And two of the biggest complaints that I've heard about formal mentoring is that they feel like it's forced. In other words, an organic mentoring relationship should kind of happen organically, you know, naturally, somebody seeking somebody else out. And I agree 100%. The culture has to support learning. If you don't have a learning culture, a formal mentoring process probably is not going to work. One of the other things we kind of heard from some of the union bosses is they were worried about if there were deficiencies, was this going to turn into a punitive thing and those type of deals. And in my opinion, and I think the way that we try to set it up, mentoring should always be a positive experience. Personally, maybe let's talk about that for just a second. Does anybody see kind of any negative results or any negative sides to mentoring? Do you feel like a formal mentoring is pushing it on the organization versus just allowing those relationships to develop naturally? And anyone have any thoughts along those lines?
I can make something on it, Chief. I think I understand how there's people that could think a formal mentoring process could have some negative stuff, but I think they're not looking at the fact that the formal mentoring is literally just the forms and kind of the idea of here's how we're going to go through and make sure we've got some structure so that we're making sure all this stuff's getting done as long as these, so we can help them grow as a person. A lot of it goes back to the comment I made earlier about just having great people. I was fortunate 5 or 6 years ago, y'all sent me to FDIC, and I doubt Chief Halton remembers, but we had a conversation at one of the events that evening, and they had been talking about the culture of the fire service and how we'd gotten away from them first mentality, and that, you know, we were putting them second and making us first. And it was him and Chief Salka and Chief Lasky. That evening I caught up with him because we had just finished a hiring process that had some amazing people in it, but we had some people that still had that ideal that if they were going to get hurt or they were going to get injured, they weren't going to go make the grab. And so that kind of became our first thing when we were hiring, was we got to make sure these people are willing to do the job first. You know, we've got it right there on the mud flaps. But secondary to that, we have to have people that are passionate. So once we get those people that are passionate and we find out what they're passionate about, now that leads us into how we're going to mentor them, because we can take them. And once we've got all their skills to that competency level and that proficiency level, now we build them for future success by letting them run with whatever they're passionate about. We've been lucky to have a bunch of people at my house be recognized for stuff. Most recently, it was a driver engineer, apparatus operator, Kearns. You know, he's a guy that used to be an officer and now he's a driver for us, but we know he's passionate about the history of the fire service because he's one of the longest standing members of the department. So we found out that's what he was passionate about and we let him run with that. And so that's how we built the mentoring process, to allow them to take what they're passionate about and run with it. And now it's that trainers teaching trainers. They're teaching other members of the organization about the history of the very organization that they're involved in and the newer members as they come in. Maya's pre-plans and honor guard stuff. So, you know, while Hamlin's going to teach our guys about SOLs, I'm going to teach them about this, but it's just setting up that structural component of knowing what each person's passionate about and then making sure they're getting that information and growing as they can throughout their career.
Bobby, just to dovetail quick with what Wes was just saying. And so if you think about, there's nothing that precludes somebody from having another mentor within your system. In other words, your system is set up to help people to be successful within your system, right? There's other aspects of the fire service of being a member of the Colony Fire Department that are not related to the functionality of the system, right? There's the esprit de corps, there's the personal development stuff. There's just the networking and the familia things that go on, right? And that's a whole different realm. So you may have, you know, like, Jesse might be my mentor if I'm a young engineer and I'm looking to become a lieutenant within your program, right? And he'd be telling me, okay, this is some company officer stuff. This is what you got to, you know, this is what you got to complete to get to this point. This is what you got to understand about this, about the disciplinary process, or about, you know, whatever the colony has in that formal mentoring program for that stage, right? But then I might reach out to Garrett and say, you know, Garrett, how did you develop all these relationships outside the fire department? How did you balance, you know, having like 8 kids or 5 kids or, you know what I mean? Or whatever else you do on the side, because, you know, all of us work with our churches. We work with our, you know, the veterans groups, we all have stuff. And that's part of it too, right? I mean, so I think that, and you might have a whole different mentor in the Colony Fire Department that you look to for where you might want to be in 20 years versus the person who's helping you to get to the next level within the system, right? And I equate what you guys are doing to the wildland program with the red carding, right? And it's run in a very similar way. You get a task book and you get assigned somebody who's going to help you achieve those goals within your task book, right? And it's a very similar system when you get into a formal ICS structure and you're trying to become like a planning sections chief, or you're trying to become, you know, a task force leader. And that person is critical. But you might be more inclined to look towards the team leader in terms of when you want that one-on-one counseling about, you know, just the stuff that comes up on the job. You know what I mean? Am I ready to promote, or do I really want to, you know, I'm kind of interested in doing this, but I'm worried if I go in the fire marshal's office, they'll never let me out, you know, because it's a, you know, no one comes out alive from the fire marshal's office and stuff like that, right? And that's not always something that you can, your relationships are always different with different people. And so I like what you're doing because it helps somebody within the system that I know is going to help me to move forward as a functioning member of the colony. The one thing I think would be interesting to get together with the mentors, because you made an interesting comment to me, Scott. You said we have an unusually high washout rate. The question should be, why is that? You know what I mean? Is it we're not bringing in, you know, I mean, I think it's just something you got to do internally, but it'd be a great exercise to say, you know, did we hook them up with the wrong person? Is the selection process, as Wes was saying, you know, the person coming in saying, yeah, I don't want to go in burning buildings if I could get hurt. That's a problem. You know, I love that line and, you know, full disclosure that behind enemy lines, the real guy, Scott O'Grady, is a personal friend of mine, where Gene Hackman comes out and says, I intend to put you in harm's way. My son laughs every time I bring it up because he goes, Dad, it's the freaking Navy. The day you join, they intend to put you in harm's way. It's the freaking Navy, you know? And so he always laughs at that part in the movie, like any commander would have actually said that to any group of people. It's so absurd, right? You know, yeah, the day you put your ass on that ship, son, you were in harm's way. It's got a nuclear reactor in its belly, jackass, you know? So anyway, that's kind of what, I love what you're doing, because even in the United States Navy, right? You get assigned to a unit and your chief officer, his job is to make sure that you become, whether it's fire control, whether it's communications, whether it's the flight deck, whether it's, you know, down with the wrenches, his job is to make sure that you progress within that system. So that when you go to test, you know, say you're an E2 or whatever, that you make it to E3, that you keep moving through that system. And that's on him as the chief. You've developed the same kind of thing inside the colony, and it'd be just an interesting conversation, I think, and obviously private at this point, but it'd be an interesting conversation to try to figure out what were the characteristics, what were the backgrounds, what were the common threads in the folks who didn't fit with the colony, because it might help Chief Thompson and the rest of your command staff to select folks going forward to improve that success rate. You know what I mean? I'm just spitballing, but it caught my attention when you said it, Scott. I was like, okay, that's interesting. That's interesting. And the one characteristic, I think Wes would agree with me on this one, because I know him, curiosity to me. Like, I love curious people. Like, Bryce is a curious guy. He was curious about about you guys. That's what got him in there. You know, and curiosity is like an interesting trait, right? You either have it or you don't. You can't develop curiosity. You know what I mean? And that's what I think. I think that's like the number one thing in a great firefighter. You know, they're like, well, how does that work? You know, they're always the guy you find with something. Did you just take that apart? Yeah. You know, do you know how to put it back together? No. Yeah. I love those guys, right? You know, and gals. You know, so I don't know. I would love to have, I'd love to have a conversation with you guys someday about how you refine your selection process based upon your mentoring process and its success and failure rate, you know, and it's not saying anything wrong against the folks that didn't make it, right? Some folks are fit for Louisville, some folks are fit for Coppell, some folks exactly. For Dallas, some folks for the colony. It's not good or bad or right or wrong. But you want to bring in people that are going to have the best chance of succeeding, in my opinion. Unless you like firing people, Scott, and that's on you.
So as we start to wrap this up, let's go around the horn and maybe we can relate this to formal or informal mentoring. But starting with you, Captain Gray, what kind of makes up a good mentor, either as a mentor or as a learner? What are your thoughts on that? We'll go to everybody as we wrap it up.
What makes a good mentor? It's kind of the question that you'd asked Captain Tier earlier. You know, some of the people at my station, I obviously look at how they perform their job. You know, what they're capable of doing on the fire ground it weighs heavily on it. Is it somebody that, you know, is that him and I are viewing things the same way, and he's making the right decisions without a whole lot of guidance, you know, your senior guys, people that have been there for a while. But another thing that, comes largely into consideration for me is, you know, their character. Are they humble enough to take the time with somebody? Are they willing to have a little bit of perseverance in, teaching somebody, even through failure, even maybe after they've gotten it right and you have to go back and explain it again? Is it somebody that I can trust, you know, when they're having issues, that they're going to come and ask me? Not that they're always asking me questions, but when those problems come up, can I trust that that person's going to come to me? But, you know, character is equally, if not, you know, more important to me than, you know, what they can do on the fire ground. Skills can be taught, but what kind of character do I want to, replicate within my own company?
Yeah, just to follow up, Jesse, those that we have let go, would you agree that it's mostly because of performance issues and not character issues?
Oh, yes, yes, yes. And most of it, I wouldn't even suggest that the people that we've let go, it's been something that they are not capable of achieving at some point. But I do think that there's a large portion of them that it's almost a culture shock. I mean, if you look at all of the stuff that we do and how much we talk about stuff with, you know, Monday morning quarterback, our training schedule, our quick drills, I mean, it's just a completely different thing. And if you don't come into our organization like a Bryce Campbell, who's already, you know, really passionate about the fire service and wants to be in your gear and all those things, it's just such a culture shock and unexpected thing. It kind of takes people off guard.
Bobby, what makes a good mentor?
Well, to Jesse's point, perseverance is the number one thing, right? One of the things, the other thing, I think, humility is an interesting word. No one ever defines it. And I think humility means just understanding that your level of expertise is not where that person's is. So don't anticipate that. In other words, you've got to be willing to not talk down to people, but you've got to be willing to understand that they don't know everything that you know, because we all assume that everybody's worldview is the same as ours, and nothing could be further from the truth. You know, some things come much more readily to other people, like knots. I'm horrible with knots. I've always been horrible with knots. Lasky always laughs at me because I'm pathetic with knots. I've always been pathetic with knots. But it's almost like something got into my head early on and I can't get past it, right? And I'll rappel off of anything. I'll jump out of anything. I have no problem being on a knot that somebody else tied. But for me, you know, the simple overhand, and I laugh because guys that know knots know that the simple overhand is the best damn knot because it has the least turns in it. So it's actually the strongest knot, but they're like, yeah, that ain't going to work when you're rappelling, asshole. So, you know, so you have to be willing to talk to that guy or gal and say, that's okay. We can pace it to your pace on that particular topic, you know, and you might find out that when it comes to hydraulics, they crush it. When it comes to, you know, reading fire behavior, they're unbelievable. When it comes to, you know, the EMS side of the world, they're the best. They might just have this, none of us have everything. None of us are the complete package. You know what I mean? And so I think perseverance, as Jesse said, number one, and I think perseverance goes a lot to humility. I think that the word humility in that case is understanding that everybody has limitations and everybody has, you know, things that they're never going to be as good as you want them to be. Can you get them to the level that the colony needs them to be functional? And that might be as far as they can get, right? And I think that's okay. You know, no one's gonna be the best at everything, you know? So I agree with what Jesse said. I would go with perseverance and I would go with humility. I think those are great, great deals.
Bryce,
and I think the other thing, the final thing would be that you really have to like people. You have to want other people to be successful. You know what I mean? You can't be one of those people on Twitter who are tearing everybody down all day long or enjoy that. If you're that person, don't be a mentor.
Bryce, as a mentor and now as a learner, what makes a good mentor?
I wrote down three things just a little while ago, listening to the other two guys. I would say, number one, you got to be selfless. Like, you're not mentoring someone for yourself, even though when you do mentor someone and they do well, it gives you a little boost also. So I think you got to be selfless, willing to put that other person before you at times, maybe not all the time, but another one I would say is competent. You don't have to, like Chief Halton said, you don't have to be the best at everything, but I think you should at least have some level of competence. That way you can pass on some knowledge. And then I think the biggest one is passionate. This is true for leaders, mentors, anything. People follow passion. And so if you're into the job, into some aspect of the job, it makes it far easier for your mentee to be into the job and want to be good at the job.
Outstanding. Captain Tier.
Yes, sir. So kind of like what Bryce was saying, you got stuff that's coming at you and you're hearing other people talk and it's just making you, your wheels spin and you're thinking of more stuff every time somebody says something. I think two of the first things is going to be watching and listening on both sides, the mentor and the learner. Because if you don't know what they're not good at, then you don't know what you need to be teaching them. That kind of breaks down between the coaching and mentoring side, because the mentoring obviously we're doing for long term. But and then I think there has to be that willingness to learn and willingness to adapt. I think that's where some of the people that haven't made it have washed out, was just that lack of a willingness to learn and to get better at a particular area or skill, since I think a lot of it has been skill based. And that willingness comes through, especially with the candidates sometimes. I was fortunate when we got Bryce on board, we just had that Lieutenant Nicholas Papa coordinated vent class, and I was able to send him and his mentor to the class. And when they came back, I asked them, okay, tomorrow, since we're running 48s, I said, tomorrow, I want you to give us a little class. Just let us know what you learned at that class. And the next day they had set up an entire PowerPoint and taught Nicholas Papa's class to the rest of our crew. Chief Rice was fortunate enough to sit on it. I was able to have one of my other backwards guys that was swinging come over and sit on it. And we got everybody on the truck involved. And Chief Rice was like, well, that was great. So next tour, you're going to talk to the engine guys, because it's a coordinated vent class. So we need to make sure they understand when we're going to do it. So now we're taking that information, talking about sharing knowledge. Now we're taking that information and got it from Nicholas Papa. We have our guy who's the mentor and the learner, and they're teaching it to the rest of the thing. He's been here a month. But that selection process is so important. So like Chief Halton's saying, maybe we find a way to, do better vetting process, which I think we do a great job of it already. Sometimes you just can only learn so much in an hour interview, and so much by looking at their Facebook pages and by talking to their previous employers. If we go out and we're going to hire a guy and we're going to talk to the previous employer and they're trying to get rid of him, they're not going to tell us, no, he's a stick in the mud, because they want to get rid of him. They want us to take him. So, there's that dilemma of how do we get truth about what these people are before they come in. And then some of it's just luck. We luck out with getting some great individuals, and then it's our job just to teach them up.
Bryce, I sat through your class. You did an outstanding job. You did a very good job. Chief Rice, to you, and then we'll go around and give our closing remarks and how people can get in touch with you. But what makes a good mentor?
So I broke it down a little bit, and I just read through. So I got mentee or learner, and then mentor. The mentee, obviously, willingness to learn, willingness to share. You have to share what you know, where you're at, so that we can help bridge those gaps. A hunger to do it better, that insatiable hunger to constant improvement. And then I think the last thing for being a good mentee is having the courage to fail. And maybe that's where it picks up as the mentor, is allowing them to fail in training. Like, that is where we get a fail. That's your freebie. And we need to do that so that we don't do it on the fire ground. As far as the mentor, I've got here in my notes, objective approach. I think you really kind of have to come with some objectivity, patience. You're working in a supportive role. So in a supportive role, it's not about allowing them to never make any mistakes. These two officers will tell you, I've allowed them to make some mistakes, because sometimes there's a bigger lesson in taking one on the chin, right, than me being your fail safe every single time, right? And then positive and focused on what's important. There's so much noise in the fire service. There's so much noise in our department, without getting into our garbage, but as a mentor, you got to say, turn that stuff off, man. We got other stuff to do today. and remain positive and uplifting and upbeat. And, you know, I'm working on that myself. That's one of those things. And I've got a lot of that feedback from my officers that said, hey, you know, sometimes it looks like you're having a rough day, and sometimes I'm tasked with a lot. And you and I have talked like, hey, I got to work on being, you know, outwardly, even though my inside's, you know, positive outwardly, a little more positive. And so that's a struggle. But anyways, that's what I got for those two.
Chief Rice, you hit on something real important. We're going to close out, but you know, we talked a lot and it sounded like almost just following with task book, but mentors really help people interpret the environment and interpret things. And I think that's really, they have institutional knowledge and they can help answer the why and make sense of things. And I think that's probably really the foundation and what determines the quality. Chief Rice, if somebody wants to get in touch with you for additional information, how can they do that?
They can obviously just call through the department. We've got our numbers listed for any of our firehouses and battalion headquarters. So you can go to the Colony City website, go into the fire department, and you can reach me through the, you know, the battalion line. Or if you need to email me, it's for everybody on this. Mine would be G Rice, R-I-C-E, at thecolonytx.gov.
Kevin Grail, closing thoughts. How can they get in touch with you?
Same kind of email, jgrail@thecolonytx.gov.
Any final thoughts?
Invest in each other. Be good at your job.
Outstanding. Captain Tier?
First and foremost, just thank you. I learn even just talking to y'all on this stuff. I love learning new stuff. If anybody needs to get in touch with me, just like Chief Rice said, it's wtier@thecolonytx.gov.
T. Halton, closing remarks. How can we get in touch with you? I know you're an easy person to get with, but give it to us.
I'm kind of easy to find. Pick up the magazine. I'm right in there. So, or the website or any other deal. Call for presentations is open. You know, if you're mentoring and you want to continue to share knowledge, please. Everybody's got something to share. The best piece of mentoring advice I ever got, I got from a naval officer, and he said, there's three things you need to be successful. Two to be successful, but three to thrive. And he said, the first thing is you have to know what's expected of your people. And you have to know what they're going through, or you don't know what you're doing. And one of the best benefits you're going to get out of a mentoring program is every one of these men on here knows what their people are going through because they have to relate with them every day. So they know exactly what Bryce is going through as he's going through this transition into the colony. And that's going to make them better officers. It's going to make them better people. It's just a real, the benefit's a two-way street. So you know, if you're really interested in this, I'd ask you, please reach out to Chief Thompson. He'd be happy to share with you his materials. And these gentlemen would be happy to, you know, visit with you about how, you know, how they've made it work. And I think the other thing you've seen from this phone call is if you have a really cheesy mustache, that will really help. I'm teasing. You guys
are, Bryce, how can somebody who wants to experience both sides of it get in touch with you?
Yeah, mine's going to be bcampbell@thecolonytx.gov.
All right. Well, thank you everybody for coming on and sharing your words on this. Our next show is going to be June 15th. Hopefully we will have the regular crew back. Like we always like to say, please keep the men and women that are protecting our freedom in your thoughts and prayers, because without them, this never happens. We're all on Facebook and Twitter and all those other social media. So thank you for a great show, and we'll see you next time.